It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
The pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of Solace. This is our last one for the year, so it may end up being a bumper edition. We're going to come back in the new year, the first week of January, I think, with a series of prophecies for 2017. But let's just look over some of the things that have been in the news. And I want to begin with a little bit of follow-up from one of our listeners called Grace, who wrote and asked about the whole transgender stuff and everything that was involved. Grace, thank you. It was a very interesting and stimulating email that I got from you. And one of the things that you put me onto was the 9-year-old being given puberty tablets. Now, this is an extraordinary thing. After watching a children's BBC program, 9-year-old girl became one of the youngest children in the UK to be given hormone blockers to pause puberty. These are kind of cross-sex hormones and so on. And again, all that we're saying about this, without commenting on the particulars of the individual case, which we can never really know anyway, is what we said before, that we now have the state broadcaster and the state combining to indoctrinate children who can then ask to be given chemicals which seek to alter their natural biology. For those of you who said we were scaremongering, this is actually happening. Something else that's actually happening, and again, people listen to this and they go, oh, for goodness sake, are you serious? It's not going to happen. Don't be daft. Listen, we've been warning about a lot of this stuff, and here we go now. He and she are now Z at Oxford. Students at Oxford University have been told to use gender-neutral pronouns such as Z rather than he or she. This is designed to prevent transgender students being offended. And deliberately using the wrong pronoun for a transgender person is an offence under Oxford's behaviour code. Well, I ain't calling you Z unless your name begins with Zedekiah or something, because it is beyond ridiculous. But folks, that's where we're at. Meanwhile, where we're also at is the right-on Maltese government, who are going to be responsible for the presidency of the EU Commission for the next 6 months. They banned gay cure conversion therapies. Do you note the contradiction? Apparently, you can decide to convert from female to male or male to female as a 9-year-old, but as a 19-year-old or a 90-year-old, anyone who offers you an opportunity to deal with sexual issues in what is perceived conversion, under the new law in Malta, you'll be in trouble. Anyone who tries to change, repress, or eliminate a person's sexual orientation, gender identity, and/or gender expression will be fined or even jailed. Well, if that's the law, can I ask, what happens if you try to help or change or repress or suppress a sexual orientation in which someone says that they're a paedophile? Would that be illegal? I mean, if you're accepting that it is a sexual orientation, which I think most people do, it does seem to me quite extraordinary. But there's also something else on this as well, which is extraordinary. Isn't banning this conversion therapy and fining people who may do it somehow equivalent to banning, say, dealing with alcoholism? If someone says, well, I want some therapy to deal with alcoholism, and they say, no, that's just offending people who like to drink. What if there are people who actually want it? Why are you restricting their freedom? We do know that people do change. So what's the issue? What's the deal here? When you ban something, you immediately create a black market. So will there be a black market in conversion therapy? Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's a mad world. But something that's maybe just as much serious in that, and that is the whole question of the Istanbul Convention. Now, what's this, you ask? I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you. It is the Council of Europe Convention on Preventing and Combating Violence Against Women and Domestic Violence, and also the possibility of the European Union accessing to that. What is wrong with that? That sounds just a fabulous idea. Yes, it is. Unlike many fabulous ideas, it's being used as a Trojan horse to bring in other things. So, for example, the Istanbul Convention codifies the controversial and the completely empirically unproven definition of gender as a social construct that's independent of biological reality. Really? We're going to have a law about domestic violence against women which says that being a woman is just a social construct. It's got nothing to do with biology. I'm sorry, but again, that's part of the madness. That is the world that we live in. Well, we don't need no education, do we? We don't need no thought control, no dark sarcasm in the classrooms. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall. Well, it looks as though that rather grim prophecy of the Floyd is coming true. Dr. Jordan Peterson, our friend in Canada, who is a lecturer and is really struggling with basically being accused of many, many different things, says this: social constructionism is the doctrine that all human roles are socially constructed. They're detached from the underlying biology and from the underlying objective world. Now, have you noticed something here in terms of worldviews? So many people say, oh, you Christians, we need empirical evidence, we need it scientifically based. And what's the worldview we're being sold? We're being sold a worldview right now, whether it's on gender identity, transgender, or anything else, which has got nothing to do with science. And it's got everything to do with the social construct. It's ignoring the biology and it's ignoring the objective world. Now, that's what's going on in our education system. And let me broaden that just a little bit. I can think of the pro-life students banned at Strathclyde University, just in case their views upset people. Or my favorite for a long time is the graduate who is suing Oxford University for £1 million because he didn't get a first. He said the boring teaching and the appallingly bad teaching cost him a first-class degree and prevented him having a successful career. His name is Faiz Siddiqui. He studied modern history at Brasenose College, and he believes that he would have had a much higher career. Well, I want to sue. I really do want to sue. At Edinburgh University, I got a 2-2, and if it wasn't for the bad teaching, it would have been a 2-1, it would have been a first. I think I want to sue the Free Church College, even though it's now changed its name, because unquestionably, I would have been a theological genius if I had been taught better. I mean, suing because you don't get the right degree. Well, who said about the snowflake generation? And in that respect, there's a wonderful article from our friends on Spiked about this. There's more to university than getting a good job. Indeed, there is. We should go to university to get an education. We should go to university to be able to hear different points of view and meet different kinds of people. We should not be going to university to live in a cocoon in a safe space where we receive indoctrination from the established elites, where there's no disagreement, no discussion, no argument, and we should not be going to university to get a paid-for qualification so that we can make more money. Call me old-fashioned. I think education should be about education. It should not be about social engineering, and it should not be about rearing people to do particular jobs. Those, if you like, can be secondary spin-offs, but they cannot and must not be the prime purpose of education. Of course, forgive me, I'm being a bigot. I'm speaking from a Christian perspective, which values education for its own sake. I'm not an atheistic materialist who sees human beings just as another brick in the wall, another cog in the machine. No, thank you. Let's get a Christian version of education. Now, there is an issue that is causing our friends in the National Secular Society a tremendous amount of grief and heartache. They have been fundraising for it. They're deeply concerned. It's really upsetting them. They're trying to raise money to support the refugee children from Aleppo.
Not that one.
No? Oh, sorry? Not that one. Okay. They're really, really concerned about the impact of Boko Haram on Nigeria.
Not that one.
Okay, hang on a minute. Let me think. What is a really key issue that would cause the National Secular Society to support a fundraising campaign and even to donate some of their own money? An issue in Scotland. Is it education? No. Is it the hospitals? No. Is it... I'm trying to think about... Got it. This is really key. You need to sit down when you're listening to this because this will shock you. Apparently, on the island of Lewis, the Western Isles Council do not have their swimming pool open on a Sunday. Now, this is traumatizing some secularists so much that they started a fundraising campaign to get enough funds to enable the council to have it open on a Sunday, and they've raised the £11,400 with the backing of the National Secular Society. Unfortunately for them, the council, who are democratically elected representatives, have said, no, we're not going to open it. For lots of different reasons. I think one of the simple reasons is, why should people be compelled to work on a Sunday? The Secular Society, the council said, is incorrect in its assumption and assertion that the sports centre is not open on a Sunday for Sabbatarian reasons. But even if it was, so what? What business is that of the Secular Society? And why should they, as an unelected lobby group, seek to impose upon a democratically elected council what should be done? Oh, say our secularists, don't you realise if you don't want to swim on Sunday, you don't have to go? You could almost say that about any single law. The fact is, the National Secular Society have shown themselves for what they really are, in their true colours. They're not interested in swimming in Lewis on a Sunday. They're not interested in the people of Lewis. What they're interested in is giving the church a kicking, trying to make it look ridiculous, bring out a whole load of different cliches, and portray themselves as defenders against religious oppression. They really do need to get a life. They really do need to butt out of other people's business and let local councils get on with what they believe to be the right thing. Why should we all have secular values imposed upon us? Now, let me broaden this just a little bit more widely. There's a wonderful statement by G.K. Chesterton, which he made in March 15th, 1990, in an article in the Illustrated London News. How does this join up? This is what he says. Listen to this carefully. The special mark of the modern world is not that it is skeptical, but that it is dogmatic without knowing it. It says, in mockery of old devotees, that they believed without knowing why they believed. But the moderns believe without knowing what they believe, and without even knowing that they do believe it. Their freedom consists in first freely assuming a creed, and then freely forgetting that they are assuming it. In short, they have always an unconscious dogma, and an unconscious dogma is the definition of a prejudice. That's one of the reasons that we're here in Solas, to help people think, not dogmatically, not with the dogma of the fundamentalist religious person or the dogma of the fundamentalist secularist. You see, I as a Christian have an awareness and a consciousness that I do have a dogma. I do have beliefs. I do have things that I think. But I'm prepared to question those and to allow them to be questioned. The trouble with the National Secular Society, the trouble with the fundamentalist, atheistic, materialistic secularists who are largely the elites in our culture now, their philosophy is the predominant one. The trouble with them is they think they don't have a philosophy. They think they don't have doctrines. They think they don't have dogma. And so all their feelings and all their thoughts are just a reflection of their prejudice. They won't allow themselves to be questioned. And they want to enforce their dogma on everyone else. You want an example? A local island council in the remote northwest of Scotland decides, because perhaps of tradition, because perhaps of finance, because perhaps of local circumstances, decides not to have their swimming pool open on a Sunday, and the National Secular Society says, no, we must impose this, and they only want to impose it because they think it's having a go at the church. In fact, one official of a secular society said this, we need to check if any of these councillors have a religious conviction. And I don't think he meant were they put in prison for their faith, though, who knows? And he also said, we need to picket churches. Yeah, this is the brave new tolerant world of the secularists, who are so blinded by prejudice, they can't even see how prejudiced they are. And so this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, a new one just begun, and so happy Christmas. What? John and Yoko, yep, peace on earth and so on. I'm afraid, though, it's not going to be, is it? And the horrendous images and pictures coming out of Aleppo are just, they are just that, they are horrendous. not quite as simplistic as it's put across. It's not just that the Russians and the Assad regime are bombing to destruction eastern Aleppo. It's also what's happening in other places. It's the fact that Al-Qaeda, and it's not mentioned much on the BBC, but Al-Qaeda are a huge part of now what we perceive to be our allies. It is utterly and completely horrendous that this is happening. What can we say? I think that there will not be peace without Christ. Humanity has never had peace. I'm stunned. I want us to take Syrian refugees, but I want us all to realize our participation in this in terms of short-sighted policies in the Middle East and an unwillingness to recognize the general sinfulness of humanity and the insane aspect of selling arms to dictatorships. And having our worst enemies, Al-Qaeda, suddenly becoming good friends. I can hear a response, you know, what do you mean Al-Qaeda become our friends? Look, they've got a new name now, Al-Nura or something. But the reason they become our friends, it's a simple adage of my enemy's enemy is my friend. And Assad's the bad guy, and the Russians are the bad guys. And so those who are fighting, there are, inverted commas, moderate forces. There are the Kurds and so on. But there's also ISIS, bizarrely, and there is also Al-Qaeda. And that's why we say that. Incidentally, I read a report from a very respected Middle East correspondent who said, why have ISIS been allowed to remove hundreds of fighters, probably thousands of fighters, from Iraq where they're being attacked and sent back into Syria? And this correspondent believes that, in effect, the Americans are not bombing and we're not bombing them to let them come in and fight. We're playing games again. This is what happens. And when we play games, that's when you end up with not just us, but the Russians and everybody else. I mean, a plague on all your houses, of our houses. When we play games, then that's when you end up with the photos of crying and dead children. It's just a mess. And it is so, so sad this Christmas. Please spare a thought. And more than that, I think in the new year, we'll maybe look at this issue a bit more, because we cannot forget how important it really is. And as always, as we come to the end of the year, we also think about those who've died. There have been many people this year. I mean, maybe it's just my age, but so many celebrities, so many famous people, so many people I kind of grew up with, and they've died, and reminding us that we're all mortal. But there are three recent ones in the past couple of days that I really want to think about. And one, of course, is John Glenn, the American astronaut who was the first American to orbit Earth. He's died aged 95. There are many, many tributes to him. But how many people know this? I'll bet you've not read this in any tribute. He was brought up in a Reformed Presbyterian home. He's a Sam Singer. He always publicly professed faith, and lots of people are celebrating him as a Christian hero of the faith. Though again, be careful, all our heroes have flaws, and Mr. Glenn, as a politician, was very strongly supportive of abortion. But nonetheless, he seems to have been quite an amazing man, and it's quite an incredible story, and he certainly gave the riposte to the Russian astronaut who said he'd been in space and he couldn't find God. Glenn's reply to that, or in fact, it was an interview that was given from space, he said, to look up at this kind of creation and not believe in God is to me impossible. It just strengthens my faith. He admitted that he prayed every day whilst on the trip as a payload specialist. You know, he is cited as a humble and gracious man, but I do think that that is true. It takes a particular kind of blindness to look at this kind of creation and not believe in God. For him, he said, it's impossible. Unfortunately, what's impossible for rational beings is possible for irrational humanity. A second sad death, as always, is the weatherman Ian McCaskill, somebody else who I grew up with on the BBC. A man, sadly, who'd lived with dementia for 5 years. He had that Scottish brogue, and he had this, you know, enthusiasm and kind of joy about things like anticyclones and isobars and rain and so on. He was just incredibly popular. When I think of weathermen, I think of Michael Fish, and I think of Ian McCaskill. And then we come to Greg Lake. Now, I'm looking at my colleague here, Al, who will, of course, given his age, know Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Of course he'll know that. And of course, all of you. Can you believe in my church, we actually had a worship band who wanted to become a Emerson, Lake and Palmer tribute band. So, I mean, our worship would have gone on forever. But, I mean, whole albums, prog rock, the whole thing. Listen, guys, I absolutely loved it. Sadly for Greg Lake, maybe not sadly for his bank balance, but he's better known, rather than being part of that wonderful band and the kind of creative rock, progressive rock that they did. But that was a time when I liked the word progressive. Instead of that, he's better known for that song that you will hear in on every radio station and almost in every store at this time of year. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story till I believed in the Israelite. It's one of those songs that when you hear it, you're going to be just furious, because for the next week, it's going to be going round and round in your heads. But actually, there's some good stuff in there. I wish you a hopeful Christmas. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain and sadness, leave your heart and let your road be clear. Interestingly enough, it says the Christmas we get, we deserve. I hope not. I hope you don't get the Christmas you deserve. I hope I don't get the Christmas I deserve. What I would really like to see is a Christmas full of grace and mercy and peace, because that's what Christmas is about. And I think that's probably as good a point as any to wish you a happy Christmas and a great new year. Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand, because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens, trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky, or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.